Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When I approach any translation, I first try to think why I'm doing this first. Wherever the viewer or the reader is, I kind of want them to be able to enjoy it as much as the Korean viewers would.
Welcome back to Working. I'm your host, June Thomas.
And I'm your other host, Karen Han.
Karen, it is so wonderful to see you again. But I have to ask, whose voice did we hear at the top of the show?
So for this week's episode, I talked to Hannah Im and Justine Won, who are the subtitle translators for SBS Animal Farm.
And what is SBS Animal Farm?
So SBS is a Korean network, and SBS Animal Farm in particular is a TV show, but I'm most familiar with them because of their pretty prolific YouTube channel. It's just chock full of videos about cute animals in situations as simple as, like, here's what a baby ferret looks like, and here's what it's like to raise this pet, to, oh, look, there's this dog was abandoned on the street, and this is what happened to them, to some more serious cases. So the videos really run the gamut in terms of mood and content, but the consistent thing is they're always about animals. And what really impressed me, and why I wanted to talk to Hannah and Justine, is that the subtitles are really kind of smartly and cutely translated. Like, they are something that I notice every time that I watch their videos.
And having watched, well, you can never watch just one. It's impossible. Yeah. It's like eating a Pringle. Having watched multiple videos on this channel, there's also an incredible cuteness too. I mean, like, it's not only cuteness, you kind of alluded to that, but just the animals are kind of talking, like that's the vibe that is going. And then they're translating what the animals would say. So it's kind of has an otherworldly quality. It's kind of 10 steps beyond cuteness, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. And it avoids, I think, kind of being too saccharine to a degree, because, like, it's not like the animals are given voices or they're going like, well, I'm a little cat, like on the video. No. It's just, it's conveyed solely through these captions, like what's going on and what these animals are feeling.
Yeah. All right. I believed you asked Hannah and Justine a question that is intended exclusively for Slate Plus members. What will they hear?
Yeah. So for Slate Plus, I talked to Hannah and Justine a little bit more about their workflow. I asked them if they ever watched their videos back. And we talked a little bit about when they did, why they decided to stop, and kind of what the reasoning behind that was.
Mm. That sounds amazing. If you're a Slate Plus member, you'll get to hear that at the end of the show. If for some unfathomable reason you are not yet a member of Slate Plus, why not sign up today? You'll get extra segments on shows like The Culture Gabfest and The Waves. A few shows like One Year and Big Mood, Little Mood produce entire episodes just for Slate Plus members. And you'll never hit a paywall on the Slate site. Particularly important to us, you'll also support the work we do here on Working. To learn more, go to slate.com/workingplus. All right, now let's listen to Karen's conversation with Hannah Yim and Justine Won.
Hello, Hannah and Justine. Thank you so much for coming on to Working.
Hi, thank you for having us.
So I guess I wanted to start with a kind of macro question, which is how early in the overall process do you, as translators, become involved with video?
So actually, we have a team with producers, editors, us translators, one operator, and the CG team. First, so the producer, whoever is responsible for like a video that's being produced, and a responsible editor will get together, come up with a storyline, and then they write the script in Korean. And then when they give us the script over with a text file and like maybe stills, that's when we come into the process and get involved.
And so what does your typical workflow look like, I guess? Is it that kind of two steps where you have the first kind of main chunk of Korean text that you translate and then revisions, or how simple can it be versus how involved can it be?
So to add to your first question, we don't actually participate in writing the whole script. We don't give any ideas in script because the writers are in charge of writing a script. So after the video is completed, we do the time coding of the video to upload before we upload it on YouTube.
So we're actually the ones syncing the subtitles to the video too.
Yeah, it's an involved process. And I also, one of the things that I sort of appreciate about the English subtitles that you guys do is, like, I know sometimes you'll put slashes, or I don't know what the more technical term for it is, in subtitles to kind of reflect the way that the sentence structure is a little bit different in Korean, where like some things will come first, or like a part of the sentence will come out first in Korean, but just because of the way the subtitles are in YouTube, like the whole English sentence will come out and have that little division within it to sort of denote that. Has that sort of always been the case, or like what was the thinking behind that notation?
Actually, so when I first, because I came in a little earlier than Justine, when I started, they recommended us, or like they advised us to translate whatever is like the Korean, like just straight down.
Yeah.
But I kind of figured, you know, like it's really hard to translate like the exact thing, because like you said, the structure's like totally different.
Yeah.
So I figured, like, you know, if you're, you know, an English speaking viewer, you wouldn't really mind like waiting for like an actual like good grammar sentence, right? So I kind of figured like it doesn't really have to like be super in line with the Korean subtitles. So I think I kind of started just translating it, not like word verbatim or like just as like the Korean says, but just, you know, like so it makes better sense in English when you read or watch the video.
Yeah. So is there an actual like kind of set style guide or notes that you guys try to keep in mind? And how much of a hand did, I guess, each of you respectively have in it? And what was that process like?
Well, actually, so when we first came in, the previous translators had like a set of like different guides. But, you know, like not everything's always, you know, like, for example, if it's like haha or something, it's not always going to be like LOL. Like, it has, like, different tones. So we just kind of, like, took ownership over, like, how we're going to translate each, like, slang or, like, what's it called? Like, sound effects. And we didn't really have, like, a guideline, but it seems like we, you know, like, we kind of think alike, I guess. So they look similar, but if you actually watch it carefully, then you can see, actually, like, we have different styles of translating things.
We have a little bit different, but because our content itself doesn't really vary, because our contents are very cute and bubbly, lovely, and then, like, cute animals are in it. So our tone kind of stays consistently.
Yeah,
that helps too.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by what you said about being able to tell the difference between, like, I guess, who worked on which video. How would you guys yourself characterize the difference between you guys?
It kind of depends on like what English you've learned and spoke. Mm-hmm. So for me, my family immigrated to California mm-hmm. when I was like 10. So growing up in Cali, I kind of like have Cali style of English, I guess. I use a lot of California slangs and I try to pay more attention to the details. Whereas for Justine, for example, I know she studied in England. She studied law, I think. So when it comes to like legal matters or like political stuff, I think she's a bit more professional, or she's more organized in those senses. And yeah, and just a little bit like differences in spellings.
Like the spelling differences.
S to Z.
Yeah, and it also comes with the different previous experiences as well, because before or currently I translate some legal documents as a side. And then when I'm translating legal documents, I cannot leave any data behind, and I have to translate bits and blobs, like every bits and blobs. Whereas when you're translating a video, you can kind of, you have to decide what to leave and what to drop, because you have to make it really simple and short because of the time code, because of the sync. So that's also what makes difference between our translation styles. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And to ask another process question, obviously there are two of you doing translation for the channel. Do you work on, it sounds like you work on videos independently and you wouldn't work on one video together. Is that right?
Right.
How long does it take you on average to finish working on a video? And are you working on multiple ones at the same time, or is it a matter of like finishing one, moving on to the next?
So we have like constant requests coming in. Like we have requests coming in constantly. And we generally rotate the script or like the videos that we work on. Mm-hmm. But the videos, they vary from like, it vary in like time and like different tones. Like there are some of the videos are very serious. Like it's about like animal abuse or like legal issues. Whereas like some things are very cute, like itsy bitsy kind of thing. And so for like light toned or like a short one, it takes about like 30 minutes to an hour. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the really heavy legal stuff, like legal videos, they can take up to 2 hours.
Oh wow. Yeah. And this is maybe a bit of a simplistic question, but what do each of you find to be the most difficult thing about translating from Korean to English?
So for me, it's to translate Korean memes or Korean jokes into it. Yeah, especially because it's a YouTube channel, it kind of has a lot of Korean jokes that's, you know, online. And then the hard bit is, one, I'm not sure if I can convey the exact meaning of this joke in English. But two, also I feel like the English viewers didn't really understand why this meme is coming in to this scene. Okay. Because it's more like a Korean thing.
Yeah, sometimes. You kind of have to know the culture or like the famous Korean shows. And for me, because it's been only like 3 years since I've been in Korea. Mm-hmm. And at first when I came here, even though I spoke very fluent Korean in America, I couldn't understand like what the cafe worker was telling, like asking me at first. So I had to relearn Korean really fast working here. So like now I'm super fluent, but sometimes when they have like idioms or like the four character idioms or
those
old
are
sayings, oh man, like that really throws me off. And I have to ask the producer like, oh, what does this mean? Yeah. Like I actually don't get it. Or sometimes they take the character, like four character idioms, and tweak it into like dog or cat idioms. So that really throws me off again. But on top of that, we have to try to figure out like if there are any similar old sayings or idioms in English.
Right.
So if they do, yeah, that's perfect for us. But like, if they don't, then I have to make up something.
Yeah. I will say, whenever I watch variety shows, the games where they do the four character idioms are the ones where I was like, I can't. I will never be able to get this.
So you're not the only one. I'm there.
Yeah, because sometimes then the translation gets really long because you want to explain what the meaning of it.
Yeah, but for them, it's like four characters. I'm like, oh, whoops.
And just really quickly, for the sake of our listeners who aren't familiar with what we're talking about when we say four-character idioms, would you be able to quickly explain what those are?
So some of the Koreans here, they have the origin of Chinese characters. So each character means a Chinese character, and when they're put together, usually they're four characters, they mean an old saying, or they represent an idiom. So I don't know if it's an actual legit the four character idioms, but there's like an idiom saying 폼생 폼사. So each, I think 폼 isn't, but like something
폼생 폼 means a shape.
Yeah, like shape. You live in this shape. You
die in this
shape. This shape. But yeah, it kind of basically means like YOLO. Like, or like F it, kind of. So it's like long sentence condensed into four characters, basically.
Justine, what you brought up was something that I thought about asking as well, because there are sometimes images on the screen of like screen caps or sound bites from very popular Korean shows that pop up, but those generally kind of just come and go, where I assume it was because like trying to contextualize and explain it would take too long or not really be worth the effort.
So what I try to do is I try to find if the script, a quote, like a K-pop lyrics or popular lines from a variety show, then I kind of just translate it exactly.
So for like K-pop lyrics, we actually go search up K-pop lyrics like in English. So, you know, like just to give like the same exact message. But if it's from like variety shows, we tend to try to like give the exact same message, but you know, like English speaking viewers might not get the actual joke.
Yeah.
So we actually sometimes we don't translate it verbatim, but we kind of make our own joke, or kind of turn it into a joke that makes sense in that particular situation, which also makes sense in English.
So it doesn't ruin the storyline and stays.
That's really hard to
And I wanted to talk about some other Koreanisms, I guess, as well. Hannah, you mentioned like the challenge of translating what's basically a sound effect, like when you have k-k-k or like hee, like which is just meant to express a sound, and then having to romanize that. What is that process like?
So usually like k-k-k, I think we both kind of like try to put LOL, unless it's kind of like k, which is like one, like ha, kind of like it's condescending, scoffing. And for like me, when it's like hing, I try to be a little cute, so I do like boohoo or like sad. And when it's like hudarda, it's like the ha hu do do or whatever. Then I try to translate it to my gosh. But I've seen Justine do it a little differently. But I like hers too, because I'm sure she has more Korean knowledge than I do.
Oh, actually, I actually copy boohoo from her.
Oh, okay. Well, then it's a mutual relationship.
Because her translation is really, really cute. It's very like baby talk, and then I like it. So I try to copy her translation sometimes, because I like it.
I think we refer both of...
I think so.
Yeah. Both of our...
I love that, though. Especially, like, because of the fact that you work on videos relatively separately, the fact that you still are working with each other in that respect is really, really nice.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask about a couple of other, I guess, kind of cute translations as well. For instance, like, did you call meh for, like, pulanam, or, like, shogun for, like, shiansa? And, the, like, the cutification of phrases, I guess. How do you decide like when you want to do that? Because sometimes it is inherent in the Korean slang version of it, but sometimes it is like, for instance, the saying like doggo for dog, or like food as an F-E-W-D, or things like that, even if the Korean text doesn't contain that kind of informal term. How do you decide like what you want to be cute in that way?
Mainly, I think we try to adhere to what the tone of the video is itself, because sometimes the producer may not have like cute Korean words, but if we're translating and we kind of see that the general tone of the video is very cute, or it's like about like a puppy being the main character or whatever, then we try to make it as cute as possible and come up with like new lingos for these puppies or cat or kittens, whatever. So I think it's really just up to us, like how we perceive the video.
That's true.
We'll be back with more of Karen's conversation with Hannah Yim and Justine Wan after this.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listeners, I hope you've been enjoying Working Overtime, the bi-weekly bonus version of Working focused on listener questions, which you can catch every other Thursday in our feed. We love to give advice and we want to answer your questions, respond to your concerns, and generally share ideas on that show. So, is there a creative problem you're having or a creative practice that's working very well for you right now that you'd like to share with our listeners? Well, drop us a line at working@slate.com, or even better, call us and leave a voicemail at 304-933-WORK. And if you're enjoying this episode, don't forget to subscribe to Working wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to Karen's conversation with Hannah Yim and Justine Wan.
It's so interesting to hear about the difference, I guess, between translating for something like this versus like legal documents or really anything else. How do you, I guess, approach any given translation job? Because like I feel like a lot of people tend to just think of it as like point A to point B, just like translate it literally from one thing to the other. But like there's so much more involved with that, and there's so much more that you have to think about in the work that you're doing. So how would you guys say you approach any given assignment for translating?
Before working here, I've worked at an artist agency, like a K-pop artist agency. Mm-hmm. And there I had to translate a lot of the interviews, like verbal or written interviews. And for verbal interviews, I had to first listen to the Korean audio, come up with a Korean script or preview, and then translate that preview into English. But for that work, I had to be really careful because depending on what words I use, like specific words I use, it really affects the artist's like image.
Yeah.
Or what the artist is trying to convey or like deliver. So it was like a very delicate work. But, like, for SBS Animal, I think the approach is just, you know, like, you get the script and then you translate and then give the revisions.
Yeah. Pretty straightforward, I'd say. Because when you're, obviously, before translating, you have to consider many aspects, like the viewers, in terms of videos, the viewers and the purpose and the function of the video and then how it should be conveyed. So I think for SBS Animal videos, it's a bit more, it's simpler. So I think what we consider the most is to make the translation more like easy to read. So it's not too long, so you don't miss out any details, or not to ruin the storyline.
Yeah.
And keeping the jokes within the line. That's what I consider when I'm translating.
I think for me, when I approach any translation assignment, I first try to think why I'm doing this first. Mm-hmm. Like, what motivates me to, like, wanting to translate this well, I guess. Mm-hmm. So wherever the viewer or the reader is, I kind of want them to be able to enjoy it as much as the Korean viewers or readers mm-hmm. would. So that's, like, one of the approaches that we have in, like, how we approach it, like, personally. And, of course, like, in terms of, like, profession, we kind of have to, like, approach it according to how they want us to translate it.
That's fascinating. I love hearing you guys talk about this because there is such a kind of level of mental gymnastics that's involved with doing translation. And with that in mind, something that we talk about a lot on this show is the idea of writer's block or creative block in general. And I was curious, what does that look like for you guys in your line of work? Or do you not tend to experience such kind of block?
So obviously we want to translate it in a very creative and in a very witty way. Mm-hmm. But our process is, it doesn't really allow any time to think, right. like come up with brilliant right. ideas, because we have to give the translation as soon as possible. So we often we're asked to complete our translation within 2 or 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And so the CG team can work on start their work with our
gotcha.
Translation.
Yeah.
So we don't really have the freedom, or we don't have the spare time to mm-hmm. be brilliant and be creative.
We're always on our toes. Yeah,
yeah mm-hmm. exactly. So what I do is I tend to kind of neutralize the translation when I experience the writer's block, or if I, you know, experience any difficulties in translating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I think, you know, there's a saying, like, if you don't use it, you forget it. Mm. So even though I grew up in the States, since coming here and only been speaking Korean, I feel like I've lost some English. So it's not like I've forgotten it completely. But, you know, when I want to translate, like, a joke or, like, a slang, you know, the slangs I've used to speak all the time, like, they don't come up in my mind. Like, they don't pop up right away. And sometimes, like, when I... Because, like Justine said, it's very fast-paced.
Yeah.
So when I'm translating, I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is not it. Like, oh, I can do better than this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, I don't have the time. So also, apart from that, there are, you know, like, most of our videos are about dogs and cats.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, there are a lot of dog and cat lingos existing mm-hmm. already, or they're very easy to make a pun out of, I guess. Whereas, like, for other animals, like chipmunks, or, like, goats are okay, but, like, chipmunks or some other, like, birds or whatever, yeah. They are pretty hard to make a joke out of or, like, pun the text. So what we both try to do is, sometimes I also, like, find Justine looking into other channels or other, like, animal channels.
Yeah.
Referring to, like, different subtitles. And, like, I search up, like, online, like, different lingos or, like, different puns I can come up with. Those are our creative blocks, I guess. Yeah. Like, the time, of course, the language, mm-hmm. and the lingo or puns, yeah. Nice.
Do you feel like you figured out, I guess, a kind of best way to get over those kind of creative blocks or frustrations, specifically with regards to the time issue? Like, just because you know you have such a limited window in which to work on one video, do you say, like, oh, like, this thing wasn't totally what I loved here, so the next time, like, I'll be able to do this? Or, like, how do you, I guess, keep moving forward and upward?
I kind of have, like, a sticky note on my computer. And, like, if it's something I really don't want to forget, like, and something I feel like I'm going to forget, then I kind of, like, write it on there. And when something very similar comes up, then I go back to my sticky note and refer to it. But, like, the more we see the subtitles, the better we get. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we just kind of overcome it naturally the more we translate it or translate similar things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I did a similar thing. So I have a sticky note on my laptop and I write down some stuff that I don't want to forget, obviously. But what I do is I sometimes go back to the channel and then watch the videos that I translated. Mm-hmm, yeah. And then I kind of like redo my work on my own. So I'll just watch the video that I've translated and be like, oh, Justine, you could have done so much better. And then I'll just like try to, I think that really helps to revise my own videos and rework on it. So so I kind of memorize like what I could have done. And then that's what I'm going to do next.
So there are some videos that I'm very regretful. Sometimes I call, because we get feedbacks, right? Like on the comment section. And sometimes, like, there's one I did and they loved the translations. Then I'm really happy. I'm like proud of myself. I'm like, oh, yeah, Hannah, go. Like, you atta girl. Like, so we both always look into the comment section and try to, like, figure out what went wrong. Or what we could have improved.
Yeah. Comment sections are such dangerous places to go.
It's
not good for mental health.
But actually, they're generally very nice. They're good. Not too mean.
Yeah.
I think that's also one of the reasons why we use puns a lot, because people love it. Yeah. People always like leave the comments on it, like, "Oh, that is really funny." Mm-hmm. And then a few of the comments that we get is that we translate animals different. Wrong sometimes because we're not like animal experts, so we don't know the exact species of the animals. So in those cases I'm like, I couldn't really I feel like I could have searched more. But
so actually there is an episode of that. So there was this video on a chipmunk which I translated as a squirrel. And I gave the squirrel, well, so in Korean it was ramji, right? Because it's taramji, and taramji here can mean both squirrels and chipmunks. Little did I know it was a chipmunk, not a squirrel, but I went and translated as squirrel and named it Ramsey, like Gordon Ramsay. So people actually generally loved the translations because I used a lot of puns, because, you know, squirrels are used to very easy to pun. But some of the comments were saying, oh, that's not a squirrel, that's a chipmunk. So I had to redo the translations.
It also like connects to the problem that we don't have much time. So we don't have much time to research the whole species and then, you know, pick what name to use or what kinds to use. So
But I learned my lesson, and every time like now a squirrel or a chipmunk video is always being made, I'm always like, wait, this is a chipmunk. Oh no, this is a squirrel, you know.
Onwards and upwards. And so for last question, I'm curious if there's one thing on each of your like post-it notes that you mentioned earlier that you feel like you turn to the most or is like your favorite thing.
It's a long gone, but I used to. So there's one time I translated a otter video. So it was about like an otter couple. And then I was looking for otter puns to make the translation more fun. And then there's a term, otterly. So in the translation, I said, oh, that's utterly unfair. And I quite liked it.
That's good.
Yeah, so I wrote it down because I liked it. And then there's another, I don't know if I can say this, but there's another utter video coming in, and I'm definitely going to use it.
Nice. Oh, I feel like for me, I've kind of like grew out of referring to sticky notes because like now I kind of like know everything. So for me, instead of like having a favorite sticky like thing on the sticky note, I think I make my own puns. And there's not like one I can think of right now, but
there's one thing that I really liked that we both worked on. It was like cats just me like yelling at each other, and then we were like, oh, they're fighting in Catonian.
Oh yeah,
Catonian, or something like that. So we just like come up with some joke, and then like we will mix dog and citizen because we have another series. It's called Pawnews. So it's a news about it's a news for dogs. So we're like, oh, the dogisms are suffering from whatever syndrome or. So,
Catisms.
Yeah. So we come up with our own puns too.
feel like cute. Now I try not to refer to the sticky note and kind of like explore, like, you know, take that challenge to like make my own pun.
I think I'm so grateful for the writers letting us to translate that way because there's no, but they don't really intervene or
I think a lot of times, like, I kind of make the word longer, like have more syllables, like instead of like saying beauty, beauté, like kind of make it a bit luxe, like luxurious, kind of a bit elegant, but funny at the same time. Yeah, those are, I think, my go-tos, like beauté.
Yeah, I love
that. Catizens.
Yeah, and I just know that I won't be able to translate like this in any other channels.
Right.
So, so I'm really grateful for the team giving us much discretion over the translation work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of autonomy. But it comes with responsibility.
You have to be really quick.
And if the translations are wrong, then you know what's coming.
It's really nice to hear that you have that kind of creative freedom, though, because I think that's a big part of why I find the video so fun and charming, like, is the way that you guys have translated them. Like, they're just fun to read and to watch.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on the show. It was so delightful to meet both of you and chat with you. I can't wait to see more of your work.
Thank you so much.
Up next, Karen and I will talk about how being forced to work quickly can lead to rapid improvement and the challenges of deciding and maintaining an appropriate tone when writing. I found that absolutely fascinating. And I have to insert here that I am one of those people who really enjoys learning languages and finding opportunities to use them. I'm that person who tries to get into a deep philosophical conversation with native speakers when I'm still at the 10 words of vocabulary, no grammar stage. Whereas my partner, who studied Japanese in a very serious, very intense way for many years, avoids using it because, well, she has standards, you know. So before we get to the lessons from that interview, I'm curious where you are on that spectrum and how your attitude to using the language you learned from your family compares with languages you've learned in other settings.
Yeah, so I learned Korean while I was growing up from my parents. And so I would say that I am conversationally fluent, but definitely not fluent to the point that I could have done like my job as a film critic, like in Korean. Like, I don't have the technical vocabulary that I guess is kind of one step above what I would be doing. Mm-hmm. So I like also couldn't conduct interviews in Korean, most likely.
Yeah.
As for, I actually did learn Japanese during high school.
Oh.
But my level of fluency is really not up to par. Like, if I had to, I could probably get around okay and like read signs all right, but I would feel very, very guilty, I guess, if I tried to hold a conversation with it, with somebody, or like tried to ask for directions, it would be very, very apologetic the entire time.
I'm a great believer in, if you want to learn a foreign language, one that isn't your native tongue, just like go for it, because that's the only way. You know, if you're hung up, it's very hard. You know, if you're uptight, it's very hard to learn and improve, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's better to have some confidence. And I'm sure whoever you're talking to like will appreciate that you are making that effort.
Or be very amused, yes.
Yeah.
I was shocked at the turnaround speed that Hannah and Justine are asked to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the degree of difficulty of the translation that they're working with is really high. You know, all the most difficult challenges, humor, slang, youth culture, language, potentially a quite expert audience. I mean, the people watching are probably really into animals, and a situation on YouTube where you know people can give feedback very quickly and not always with great restraint. At the same time, it sounds like that's actually been a pretty useful constraint for both of them. They know they have very little time, so they do their best and they focus on constant improvement and like preparing for the next assignment and getting better next time. And that really is a great way of building skills, even though it must have been more than a little bit nerve-wracking at times.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not my preferred mode of learning.
Yeah.
Like, the phrase, I guess, is like something like what, like learning under fire, where it's like you just don't have a choice and you have to just go and keep doing this thing. But you're right in that, like, when you have no choice but to do the work, then that's what you're going to do. Like, there's just no other way around it, or else the work doesn't get done, especially in their situation where there are so many people in the workflow. If as soon as their workflow slows down, it affects the production of the entire channel. So that kind of outside pressure is also, I think, very, I don't want to say effective necessarily,
because
it's not something that is ideal necessarily.
Yeah. I think you would want this in maybe one part of your work life only. It sounds like they both have kind of portfolio careers.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want this in every element or in every area. But, you know, yeah, if you really want to be forced to get better and get quick, oh my God, nothing more effective, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to me to hear that Hannah, at least, has a habit of going back to videos after they've gone live mm-hmm. and asking herself how she'd do it differently at some point later, you know, when mm-hmm. she's more experienced or maybe just has more time to think about it. Is that something you make a practice of doing?
Frankly, no. And I think it's just because Hannah is maybe a little more mature about herself and like self-improvement than I am. Because I go back and I see those things, I'm just like, oh, like this is terrible. What was I thinking? Rather than necessarily being able to look at it in such a clear-eyed way. But it is really valuable, I think. Or even like, I would say that I don't necessarily go back and look at old things that I've written, but I have an awareness, I think, of what my weak points are. Like, even if I'm not specifically looking at a piece, I'm like, I understand. Like, for instance, very early on in my career, one of the things that I found difficult was like getting over using a very academic voice, especially like right after I got out of college. Yes. I was like, oh, this all reads really dry. And I know that that's the case. And I know that that's something that I have to work on.
Well, first of all, same. But second, one of the things that I'm very conscious of is there are certain podcast hosts who will say, mm-hmm. I cannot listen to myself. I never listen to myself. Mm. And, you know, I get it. You know, if you really have a problem with that, I'm not going to, you know, Adam Driver anybody into doing it. But I genuinely have, I'll speak for myself. I have found it so useful to listen to myself, not necessarily, you know, to sit down in some very formal way and say, I am going to learn, you know, but you listen to yourself and you hear things that you could improve upon.
Yeah.
And if you don't, or even just sometimes, like, you know, I'll listen to a show and think, I don't know what I was doing with my mic that week, but it was not in the right place. And so even little things like that, that are not necessarily about your, you know, your skill set. Well, actually, that is part of your skill set.
Yeah.
I do think it can be useful.
It's also like, you are your own harshest critic to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's nicer to be able to hear that from yourself than like from your boss. So if you can preempt it sometimes, it's a little nicer going forward.
Right, exactly. Another one of the things that stuck out to me from the interview was the importance of nailing the tone, you know, figuring out the right tone and then successfully writing in that tone. You can't do one without the other, is a crucial element of any writing assignment. And I wonder, do you have any advice about how to do that? How do you figure out your audience and decide what kind of voice you're going to use to address them?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. And I think there is a sort of one size fits all answer that will vary in terms of method, depending on what you're doing, if that makes sense. Like, I think the key is always first to figure out what you're writing. Like, am I writing for an academic journal? Am I writing for a blog post? Am I writing like a review? Am I writing an interview? Because all of those things are slightly different formats.
Yeah.
And you probably already have some idea of how they all differ or how you think they should read.
Yeah.
Specifically in terms of figuring out voice, like, oh, like, is this something where I can be a little irreverent or informal? Yeah. Or is this something that has to be really straight down the middle? It's easiest to figure out whether you are doing that successfully or not. I think by doing something that we talk about a lot on this podcast, which is just write the thing first and then go back and look at it.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you, in reading over it, I think, will have the best sense of whether or not it feels, number one, consistent from top to bottom, and then number two, in the right voice. Because I think sometimes what can happen to me is like some things will feel a little more faster, quippy, and then some things will feel kind of slower or more dense. And when you're looking at them, you're like, oh, I understand which part has to change. And then you can go back in and sort of fiddle with it. Yeah, what about you? What do you do for this?
No, I would say same. You know, it is a matter of like consistency. You always have to know what you're shooting for. I mean, you always have to know the assignment in any, you know, whether you're in school or whether you're doing it professionally or whether you're doing something that you're putting out there just for your own self-expression. Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate question. That's the thing that you have to know or you will never succeed. Mm-hmm. But I also think when you read through it and if something just feels off, well, that just means that's not in the right voice. So, I agree that making it all sound of a piece is really important.
It's funny to say that it basically is intuitive at the end of the day, but it really is.
Yeah, I think so. It was almost a throwaway line in the interview, but my ears really perked up when Hannah talked about how sensitive she had to be when she was translating K-pop videos, partly because the audience is so ready to turn molehills into mountains. But really, that is always a key part of any translation, whether you're providing, you know, simultaneous interpretation in a courtroom or making a K-pop idol's words available to non-Korean audiences. You know, the prime directive is always to accurately represent the intent and the tone of the original speaker. Last year, you published a book about Bong Joon-ho, a Korean director who makes films in the Korean language that are hugely popular worldwide, you know, win Oscars, that kind of thing. Whatever you're doing, something is always lost in translation. Mm-hmm. What do you think that non-Korean speakers miss in Bong Joon-ho's work?
I think there are a few kind of big examples, and most of them will be like kind of cultural objects or something like that. For instance, in Parasite, like when they're forging that university letter, like in the movie, I think they're either talking about Seoul University or Yonsei University, but because the significance of those universities in Korea might not necessarily translate for a non-Korean audience, they said like Oxford or something like that. Like they name another very kind of famous English language university. The funniest example of this happens in Okja, which is a co-production. So it's in English and in Korean. Mm-hmm. And there is a scene in which Steven Yeun's character says a line in Korean that is deliberately mistranslated in English. And it's not like a key plot point or anything, and it's not really brought up in the movie, like just because like he says in Korean, my name is Kusunbum, I think, and then the subtitle is like, learning new languages will really open new doors for you, and and I asked why they did that, not for the book, but like around when that movie's press cycle was going on, and the answer was basically like, this is a joke for Koreans because this is a really like old-fashioned clunky name for Koreans, but obviously there's no sense of that for someone who doesn't know that that name is old-fashioned. Like, I don't know that either because I'm not someone who's super familiar with Korean names. And so they're like, it's funnier if he says this and then jumps out the door, like in an English subtitle. So it's funnier in that way to just do this differently. And in that case, it also really nods at mistranslation, which is a huge theme in the movie. So it's kind of metatextual in that way.
Wow. I got to go watch again then. Well, that's all the time we have this week, unless, of course, you're a Slate Plus subscriber, in which case you will soon hear a little something extra from this week's interview. That, of course, is not the only benefit of Slate Plus membership. You'll also get extra segments on shows like Culture Gabfest and The Waves, entire bonus episodes of shows like Slow Burn and Big Mood, Little Mood, and you'll never hit a paywall on the Slate site.
Thank you so much to our guests, Hannah Im and Justine Won. And thank you to our wonderful producer, Cameron Trues, who turns our kuh-kuh-kuh into ha-ha-ha every week. We'll be back next week with Isaac Butler's interview with members of the New Zealand indie rock band, The Beths. Until then, get back to work.